Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Good evening and welcome to the Progressive News Network. Our fearless leader, Rick Spezak, is in Orlando this evening at the Awake the State Summit. And they are, Rick and the rest of our fine progressive activists are there to fight the agenda of the governor of the state of Florida, Rick Scott. And they're doing good things, and hopefully they are making it a better world. And, in fact, the Orlando Sentinel newspaper wrote an article and even mentioned the Progressive News Network, so we're always happy when anybody remembers us and notices that we're here. So there's a couple of things I just wanted to let's everybody cheer. The occupation of Iraq will end in December, so that is a really good thing, and we should definitely be aware of it and be happy about it. And if we were cynical, we would say that that was because they couldn't prosecute anybody, and so they had to go. But we won't be cynical, because in the spirit of Mr. Spezak, we will just take the high road and a happy note and better world to come, and good, we're out of that war. Now let's get out of the other ones once and for all. So there's just a couple of things, just a couple of little things to tell you while we're waiting for our next guest. She, by the way, is the leader of Slow Food in Palm Beach County and some of Broward County. She can explain how that county separation works. But in any case, she's coming. She'll be here any minute. Her name is Diane Campion. And if you are interested in helping out a wonderful candidate, Elizabeth Warren is running for Senate in Massachusetts, and she is the lady that the conservatives would not allow to be the head of the Consumer Protection Agency that was proposed. But she is running for Senate, and even though she's not in Florida, she is a wonderful role model, and also someone that we should – well, I don't know. I'm supporting her. Let's put it that way. I'm supporting her. And if you want to know more about her, there's a biography on there, and there's all kinds of information. Her website is ElizabethWarren.com, and she's running for Senate. And even, you know, sometimes it's just supporting by signing a petition or whatever you do. It's part of the wave that's going with the Occupy Wall Street, and she's one of the champions. She is the Joan of Arc, and hopefully she won't be burned at the stake, yet she will lead to definitely a better world. And anyway, her website is ElizabethWarren.com, and I will be doing a report on her at a later time. Also, there is a website you might want to check out called GetMoneyOut.com. They are preparing a constitutional amendment to get the money out of. Wait. Let me see. Hang on. Hello. Hi, Diane.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Welcome to the Progressive News Network. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Okay, so you are the fearless leader of the Slow Food Glade Post.
That's right.
And what is it now? That's Palm Beach County and what other counties? And I don't know how it's divided or if it matters. But
It's North Palm Beach, South, say PGA area, to through Broward County, to the Dade County line.
Okay. So it's pretty wide.
I mean, if somebody wants to join our group from other areas, that's fine, too. But, yeah, it is a large area.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you the question that I always ask people. How did you get into doing good deeds and getting involved in being an activist?
Well, I come from the West Coast, and my mother was always very activist, and I was always involved in projects, particularly environmental. And I had been living in Florida for 20 years and was, you know, always complaining that people weren't concerned about environmental issues or food issues in this area. And then I saw that old Lily Tomlin quote that, you know, mentions that you know, you have to be the person doing something. You know, you are somebody too, so get out and do it. And I called Slow Food that day and asked if I could start a chapter in the Palm Beach and Broward area, and they agreed, and that's what started this journey. And it's been fantastic because I moved to Palm Beach County from Miami about 5 years ago, and I really didn't know that many people up here because I'm in sales and I work all over Southeast Florida. And I've met just fantastic people, you know, doing the Slow Food work, and it's just incredible. Really, really excellent people in our area that are really doing things, and I really think that Slow Food has helped, along with other groups, in connecting them all. And hopefully we're just going to be able to do a lot to relocalize our food system.
Well, and so now you can tell us what the a lot is. What is it that you guys are doing? What have you been up to, and what are you going to be doing?
Okay. We're involved in school garden projects. And with our school garden projects, one of the important things is to take it all the way through. We try to get Slow Food principles incorporated in the curriculum, which is a lot of systems thinking, the connectivity of all things, getting kids outside, creating awareness of where the food comes from, because then children naturally eat better. You don't have to preach to them. I mean, they can memorize the food pyramid and all those things and recite it back to you, but when they're invested in growing their own food, they'll try anything, you know, and they're very interested in learning to cook. And there's not a lesson you cannot teach in a school garden. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, you could incorporate aspects of any area of a school curriculum into a garden.
Interesting.
And it's just invaluable to have that, yeah.
Wow, who'd have thunk from growing tomatoes? Who'd have thunk?
That's true.
Well, so let me
writing,
ask you a question.
You use that for writing, arts, I mean, you name it. Science, math. You know, math makes
absolutely.
Sense when you're figuring out how many seeds you need to plant.
Well, you
how to line up a row.
To know how to count how many in a bushel or whatever that means. Let me ask you a question because I was thinking about this and I thought, oh, I'm going to ask Diane because she knows all about this. I just got this email. I was cleaning out my email box, one of them, and I got this from Earth Justice, actually.
Yes.
And they were talking about the efforts to ban methyl iodide, and it has been apparently legalized to use in California, which I find shocking. But in any case, what's going on in Florida with that particular chemical that they're putting on strawberries? Because they grow strawberries here, too.
Yes, they do, particularly
you know?
In the Central Florida area. I'm not sure what the status is or the legality of that in Florida. I'm sure that's an area that we should draw attention to and that we need to do some research on because we do, you know, we do support growing things as organically as possible. And
well, I mean,
in South Florida, it is difficult. Yeah,
according to this email, I mean, that's a known carcinogen.
Right.
I can't understand. This is what mystifies me, is how
right.
they would say it's okay to use this when they know that it can cause cancer. This is not an if. This is known. I have never understood
yes.
that. I don't get
it. No,
that.
I
really
don't either. And unfortunately, there are a lot of chemicals and a lot of practices that are illegal that they don't make any sense at all on how somebody could, with any moral conscience whatsoever, could support using those chemicals on food products or just using them for anything. You know, and yeah, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
And then just
gets
into the GMO modification of seeds, too.
That's
illegal in almost all of Europe, Japan, and yet we condone it, you know.
Well,
you'd be hard-pressed to find cereal products in the grocery stores that didn't have GMO-modified products in them.
Yeah, that's because there's some great big companies in agribusiness that have a lot of money to lobby for things like that, don't they?
They certainly do, yep.
And that's what they're doing.
So that's why it's important that groups like Slow Food create awareness, you know, about those issues and also about constructive good things we can do to help combat that, you know, because it's going to be difficult, you know. A huge amount of our food is produced by large companies, the seeds. So many seeds are owned by Monsanto and Cargill now, and that they can even be allowed to buy up patents for seeds that have existed for centuries is beyond belief, really.
It is. It's incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like saying, well, there's
they've
an island out there and nobody,
you know?
Nobody's claiming it, so we're going to go claim the island and you have to pay money on it. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. That's
yeah,
that
it
with
is.
With the seeds. Oh, incredible. That's just like...
Well, they can
and that's
make it
why
illegal
we need a consumer
to...
protection agency and somebody to say, okay, cut this stuff out. That's exactly why.
Right.
But as far as what we can do to do good stuff, you're having an event next Saturday.
We are.
And why don't you tell us about it?
Okay. Yeah, we're really, really excited about this. It's we're calling it Slow Leadership in Fast Time. Slow to us, a part of Slow Food, and this word slow is not so much a time thing as slowing down and becoming aware of what you're doing, what you're eating, the choices that you make every day. Because in these fast times, these high-tech times, sometimes we don't stop and consider our actions, you know? And so that's where the slow leadership comes in. And also, anybody that takes that initiative to come to an event like this or belong to any of the groups out there that promote organic growing, sustainable ag, urban garden projects, helping in the food deserts, helping get food into those areas that don't have those sources available to them, promoting green markets. All of that matters, you know, and they're all leaders, you know, because in Slow Food, we think that we're all co-producers. You know, co-producers, because our decisions and what we buy and what we do every day, our consideration of those things is what determines what people are going to grow and what's going to be available in our marketplace. And there's tremendous power there. And so our event is this Saturday, and we're asking people to come around 11 because we're going to have booths there, or they can take a tour of Pine Jog Environmental Center, which is an absolutely fantastic place.
Yes.
And then we're going to have two panel discussions, one's from 12:30 to 2, and that's going to be on school gardens and farm to school. And we have fantastic panel members. The moderator for that panel is going to be Erica Whitfield. She's a project coordinator for RWFJ, Healthy Kids, which is a great program. They just received a large grant in our area that's getting into those schools that need that support the most, you know, in low-income areas in Palm Beach County. And they're doing terrific projects. They're doing school gardens is one of the many things they do. But they're incorporating good nutrition, school garden projects, entrepreneurship, all of that into one great package. And then our second panel discussion is going to be on food policy. And that's going to start at 2:30, and it'll go to 4 o'clock. We have the fantastic Rick Hawkins from Local Ecopia is going to be our moderator
indeed.
For that one. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
he's wonderful. And then we have Herman Holly coming all the way down from Tallahassee. I met him at the Small Farm Conference this summer. And he started something called the Red Hills Small Farm Alliance, where they've been able to change some legislation where they enabled small farmers now to sell eggs and honey directly off the farm. You know, they've been able to get the ear of some legislators, and they're going to tell us about how they're doing that and how we can help their initiatives and create them for ourselves, you know. And Trish Strong, who is also super, she's like fantastic personality. She's fourth generation Floridian. They have big ranches up around the DeLand area, and she's the head of the Florida Food Policy Council. She'll be with us. And then Robert Clouson, who has many hats. He's a county extension agent for the Sarasota area. I think it's Sarasota County. And Sarasota Food Policy Council, he founded that. And he's also one of the organizers for Slow Food Sarasota. And he also is the guy who put together the whole idea and the structure for the small farm and small enterprise conference that we have yearly now in Kissimmee. I mean, just an incredible person. So you'll have all those people that you can talk to ahead of time, ahead of the panel discussions, if you come at 11, and get their information, network a little bit. You can listen to the panel discussions, and then we have ample time after each discussion where the audience can get involved. We only can take 80 people, so everybody can just, you know, put forth whatever questions they have or ideas and just discuss. And at 4:30, we have a fantastic treat where we have Shelley Rogers, who is the filmmaker for What's Organic About Organic. She's flying in to be with us and to present her film. And Marty Mesh will be with her. Marty Mesh is another fantastic person. I mean, he's the head of Florida Organic Growers, and he's hugely involved in the organic farming movement. I mean, he travels around the country. He's actually flying in from Alabama to be with us on Saturday. And they'll both be there until 6 o'clock at least to talk to everybody and answer questions. And $15, I mean, you really need to register ahead of time. But for $15, you're going to get a lot. It's an incredible opportunity.
Oh, absolutely.
And that money will just cover our expenses, you know, the film license and
right, because the film is
site
free, and there are some costs associated with it, so this modest donation actually helps defray costs for you. Got it. Okay, so we'll I'll mention it. I hope I have time at the end to mention it again, and maybe we can put some on the website so people can go look at the New Mercury Media website and find the information there. And they can also go to your website, which is?
Slow Food Glades to Coast.
There you go. .org?
.com.
.com. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, slow food, no S, Slow Food Glades to Coast. .org.
Right.
Okay. Diane, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll be there.
Well, thank you, Mickey. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you later.
And thank you for the opportunity to talk to everybody. Have a good evening.
Well, we're happy to have you. You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. By the way, this show is brought to you by Imagineering Productions, a full-service SEO and web media company, and the Media Goddess Worldwide. We tell your story to the world. And speaking of story, we now have an interview that was done by Rick Spisak with Larry Thorson, who is a progressive activist, about his adventures with the Peace Corps. And so let's listen in.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Larry Thorson, longtime activist, longtime journalist. Larry, welcome.
Thank you very much, Rick.
How are you doing today, sir?
Well, I'm down here in Key Largo at my sailing club, a little bit away from my usual base in the Miami area, and everything's fine.
It's a well-deserved relaxation. Nothing like being out in the water with the wind and the waves.
Yeah, right.
So Larry, you tell me that you have you were one of those rare souls that had the opportunity to be in the Peace Corps. Could you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yes. Well, when I graduated from college in 1963, I volunteered for the Peace Corps. This is very soon after it was formed by President Kennedy in early in 61, and we were just now celebrating the 50th anniversary. I was recently in Washington, D.C. for some celebrations of that event. In 63, I went into training to basically to go to any country, or I said that I was willing to go to any country, and I was picked to go to Thailand. And we trained at Indiana University for the summer of 63 and then went overseas. There were about 60 of us that went over together. It turned out that we were in the sixth group already that had gone to Thailand for Peace Corps service. So I was there for 63 to 65, and I was teaching English in roughly junior high school level, a little town on the border with Cambodia, And it was a pretty remote place, a fascinating experience, one of the best things I've ever done with 2 years of my life, I think, was to be a Peace Corps volunteer.
Did you get some training in Thai?
Basically, 3 months of training. Half of every day was devoted to language training. So at the end of that time, I would say that I had a good skeleton of the Thai language was in my grasp. And after that, it was really a matter of adding vocabulary, which was came on pretty quickly. As I was immersed in this situation where hardly anybody in the area where I lived spoke English, so I really had to learn Thai. It's like being a little kid. Well, you learn it.
Yeah, throw him into deep water. He'll learn to swim or else, right?
Yeah. At the end of 2 years, I was tested as fluent minus. They called it. It was because I had never really learned to read. I had it's kind of a complicated writing system that they have in Thai, and so I really only learned to speak, and so then I was kind of a limited vocabulary because it's not reading.
Well, let me ask you a question. I've heard different kinds of, whether it's sightings or situations. Were you with any other Peace Corps workers, or were you alone in a village?
I was alone in the town where I was assigned. I was teaching English. I was the only English teacher there. In fact, I was the only person in the province doing that, in the province in eastern Thailand. But there was another Peace Corps volunteer who had preceded me into the district where I was assigned. He was working in a rural development project, and I seldom saw him. We'd get together once a month or something like that. But otherwise, it was a pretty isolated assignment, which is good in a peaceful country, which Thailand was then, and I guess it mostly still is, although its politics are rather tense right now. But I think sometimes people are assigned, peaceful volunteers are assigned in teams where the situations now are somewhat more difficult. But honestly, I don't know for sure since I'm not out there, and there's different ways of doing it.
Sure. For people who are a little thin on their Asian geography, now you've got Vietnam, you've got Cambodia, you've got Thailand. Now, Thailand is on the western side of Cambodia, right?
That's right, yeah. It's just basically a big sort of a, I don't know what to say about the shape of Thailand. It's the big body of it is on there, right next to between Cambodia on the east and Burma on the west. And to the north is Laos, and to the south is the Gulf of Siam and the Indian Ocean and all that, the islands of Malaysia and things like that, Indonesia. The situation now out there, the Thais have got this a king, that the royal, it's a republic or a monarchy with a currently an elected parliament.
Right.
From time to time they have coups. There's a very strong military. It's a tense situation because the king is very old. He's been in office since 1950 or something, 49 or 50, I think. And there's a succession crisis that is, I think, a big part of the turbulent politics that we're seeing now in Thailand.
Let me ask you, Larry, when you were over there, of course, this was during the early stages of the Vietnam buildup. Did you see American troops? Did you see American advisors in Thailand?
There was an American advisor attached to the Thai Army units in my neighborhood. It was somebody I would see. He did not live in my town. He lived in the provincial capital. But I would see him once in a great while when he came to my town called Ranjapatet to visit. There was a battalion of the Thai Army based there, and it was something that he would visit regularly. He was a Green Beret, if I recall correctly, a major in rank. And every so often he'd bring me cigarettes and peanut butter. that was very kind. Otherwise, the Peace Corps is not encouraged to have any official contact with the military. We were supposed to be, a rather separate institution that was we as workers were we were assigned by the Thai Education Ministry, Ministry of Education, to schools that asked for native-speaking English teachers, and that was the kind of thing that we were supposed to do. We were paid a bit by the Thai government, and then the Peace Corps saved $75 a month for each of us. And so at the end of the 2 years, we had $1,800 saved up, something like that. a nice nest egg when I got out in
'05.
Of course, the next thing that happened to me was that I got drafted into the Army, and very soon I was back in Southeast Asia as an infantryman in U.S. Army uniform. So I had a big part of my 20s was spent in Southeast Asia.
I would think that someone who spoke Thai would be pretty invaluable.
Well, so there's, what could you do if you're Thai? I mean, you could be an intelligence or something like that. And this was actually expressly prohibited under the legislation that set up the Peace Corps, that they did not want to have any suspicion that the Peace Corps was going to be a training ground for spies, because this was kind of an obvious charge that would be made against
people.
So I remember when I was being processed into the Army, that down the line the sergeant was looking at my background and he said, okay, Peace Corps, this means you can't go into the Army Security Agency or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And,
huh.
And they only needed infantrymen then anyway, so.
Yeah. What part of Vietnam did you serve in?
I was in the 199th Infantry Brigade. My particular battalion was based southwest of Saigon, sort of outer perimeter of Saigon security. We marched back and forth and did various patrols in places we had been patrolling for as long as we were there.
If you don't mind, a question or two about Vietnam. A lot's been made of a relocation campaign that moved a lot of northern Vietnamese to the south. And I read a book about where they were saying that a lot of the distress that South Vietnam had was from a relocation campaign that had moved a lot of northerners south. Does that meet with your experience?
After our war in Vietnam, or after the French Indochina War?
The French.
Well, an interesting aside to my Peace Corps time in Thailand was that there was almost a full quarter of the population of the town where I was lived in a Vietnamese quarter of town, and they were people who had been displaced by the fighting in the 1950s with the French Indochina War, and they were kind of a fifth column as far as the Thais were concerned. They were definitely not Thais. They were spoke an entirely different language, and they had their own view of politics. Ho Chi Minh's birthday was celebrated with a big bang in that part of the town, and the Thais were anti-Vietnamese, anti-French, anti-Cambodian, anti-whatever. And so it was an especially happy situation there. And I'm sure that if there were, there could be conflict in Vietnam itself if there were people brought in and settled in an area that didn't really have the same family loyalties and things like that that the local people, the long-established local people, would have had.
Let me ask you, the classes that you taught, were they a mix of adults and children, or were they just one or the other?
Well, I was teaching in a school, a junior high school, but I did have some adult classes in the evenings that very informal, just trying to, help people who wanted to learn some English. And but my main job was teaching in the junior high.
Uh-huh. What was, if I'm trying to get a good handle on it. The purpose of having these people deep in the Thailand hinterlands to learn English, what was the, was it economic benefit? Was it just more cosmopolitan people of the world? What was the rationale?
I think there was the latter, that the economic benefit was considered to be something that would be good down the line. The Thais speak English with a sort of a characteristic, what would you say, they hit the consonants real hard, and then some of them are completely misplaced, and they recognized it. They knew that they didn't have a grasp on reasonable pronunciation of English, and they were hoping to just increase the skills in it as an opening to the rest of the world. Some people have asked me what do you think? Do you ever think you made an impact? And I sometimes kind of doubted it. But then recently I was in touch with the family of the headmaster of my school. He has passed away, but his wife is still around, and their offspring, there's one son who's turned out to be a prominent journalist in Bangkok.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said that his mother had bypass surgery some years ago there in Thailand, and that the doctor who did it was one of our students.
Oh, how nice.
There's a little town out in the boondocks who, I don't know which particular one it was, but he had turned out to be good enough to go on to medical school. And so there's somebody I say, well, I helped to teach English to somebody who's a bypass surgeon in Bangkok.
I imagine you must be so proud of your service. I mean, America does so much in the world, and to be part of such a good outreach must really make you feel good.
Well, let me tell you something that happened when I was in Washington just a couple weeks ago for the 50th anniversary. One of the things that the missions that we had during this time, a long weekend, was to do lobbying of Congress. So I went with a team of people from Florida, and there were something like 8,000 of us, I believe, former Peace Corps volunteers who descended on Washington for this 50th anniversary. It was quite stunning how big the crowd was when we all, when they ended at the last day, we came marching together across the Potomac Bridge from Arlington to the Lincoln Memorial, and we were a real throng, just absolutely stopped traffic for an hour. But the first day that I was there, we were all assigned to try to lobby our members of Congress on behalf of the Peace Corps. And my we hit the offices of the two senators, Bill Nelson and Marco Rubio, and spoke to staffers there, and I spoke to two other staffers in congressional, the House of Representatives for South Florida. And then the real key meeting that was on our schedule was we were supposed to have a meeting with my member of Congress, who's Ileana Ross Leighton. Now, she is the chair of the House Foreign Relations Committee since the Republicans took majority in the House. So she's a very important member of the Republican leadership now. So anyway, we the four of us on this team from South Florida, we met with her eventually after waiting a while in her office. Then we were escorted down to the subway under the Capitol building to a corridor still down in the basement of the Capitol building, and met her outside the committee room, or there's this wooden door at the end of the hallway. Anyway, so she finally came trooping out and gave us all warm greetings, and I introduced myself and said, I'm Larry Thorson. I was in the Peace Corps in Thailand in 63 to 65, and then I was in the I got drafted into the Army, and I ended up in Vietnam as an infantryman. And when I got out of that, I eventually became went to work as a reporter. I was hired by the Associated Press, became a foreign correspondent, and so she looked up and said, oh, so that's why you write so well. And I thought, so you've been reading my letters. I said, well, of course, she said. So that kind of thing. So there was I'm thinking, wow, this is a little bit of a surprise that she actually does read my letters. But anyway, when I tried, my job in the lobbying part of it was to talk about the need for strong budget support for the Peace Corps.
Right.
My pattern basically was that you have, when I was in the Peace Corps in the 60s, the world population was around 2 billion or so. So it's tripled. It's more than tripled in the meantime. And the Peace Corps is still a very small operation. It's probably got fewer Peace Corps volunteers now than it did back then, when the population of the world was much smaller. And the needs now are so much greater. And it requires a bigger budget. Well, of course, there's no money, she said. No money. My last word was, well, let's at least make it a goal to try to increase this, because there's so much more bang for the buck in good relations with the rest of the world in Peace Corps volunteers, so much more than you get from military or diplomatic presence.
A lot cheaper than a drone, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, the budget of the Peace Corps, they're trying for $400 million, and they probably get knocked back to $350 or something like that. And the number of Peace Corps volunteers in service now, I think, is around 8,500, which is, you know, pitiful, small number in comparison to the need.
Yeah, I wonder what 8,000 XE warriors would cost.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, so that was sort of a summary of my Peace Corps experience recently and 50 years ago.
Well, Larry, if no one's told you recently, I want to thank you for doing Peace Corps work over in the Far East. God knows we've sent so many other things that were so much less productive and useful.
Yeah.
So thank you, sir, for your service. That's
you're very kind.
That's wonderful, and you should be justifiably proud, sir, of working with people and helping them understand each other, because building bridges of understanding is something this world doesn't have enough of.
Exactly.
On another topic, since you, as you mentioned, have been a practicing journalist your whole life, and try as you might, you can't but help be exposed to some of the current crop of commercial media out there. I was wondering if you'd give us a few thoughts on some of the media coverage, whether it be of the Republican dog show, or the paucity of coverage initially on the whole Occupy movement. Could you give us some thoughts on either of those, or something else on current media, sir?
Well, it seems that the Occupy coverage, it did start off slowly, but then, you know, what can you say about a couple hundred people being in Wall Street and yelling for change. It's kind of a local story, in a way, until it goes on and on and on, and that's what is required by a social movement, whether they want to get coverage or they want to have results, that they have to keep at it and they have to grow, and I think that's what's happened here. We can complain about the lack of initial coverage, but that's the way it is with practically everything.
Yeah, it's hard to compete with movie stars and important product placements.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But where it matters to us is you know, whether our media connections worked, and I think that they did. They to help get it started. The things that were happening on Facebook and Twitter, and the progressive news sites and things like that, that they did not fail to pay attention. They did pay attention, and they were, without being necessarily cheerleaders, they were portraying pretty well what was going on.
Great. Any thoughts on the current crop of Republican candidates?
Well, I think I saw a poll just the other day, and I'm thinking of, trying to think of whose it was. I think it was one of the broadcast outlets, but they were, oh, it was Time. It was Time magazine saying that, you know, the president was, in a way ahead, and, you know, 5 to 10 points of each of the main Republican contenders. And I think this is what the situation that we're in is, that the, more or less like what the, Obama campaign faced 4 years ago, was that the Republicans do not have a real strong candidate. They don't have people that are viewed as uniting characters. They don't have people who have strong general programs. And as long as the Democratic Party does not you know, make any big mistakes, I would think that this is going to go through pretty well, and we just hope that the Republicans keep showing up and opening their mouths. All realize that these people are not strong candidates, and it should not be a big electoral problem as long as we get plenty of people out to vote. And that is the question as to whether we are capable of making a strong vote.
Well, thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate your input, and again, thank you for your service as a Peace Corps. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with as we approach the historic 2011 Florida Democratic Party convention?
Well, I can say that I'm a member of the DEC here in Miami-Dade County. I'm on the steering committee also, and I'm impressed with the energy that is starting to bubble up in our local party. We've got a new executive director who's just come on board, Cedric McMinn, who's been he's a ball of fire, who's been with the Young Democrats here, and he's brought along quite a good bunch of his people from the Young Democrats, and I think that our local party is going to be considerably energized from this. We'll do better than we did before.
Well, let's end it on that positive note. That's fantastic news from the Miami DEC.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Mr.
Sure.
Thorson, and you have a good day sailing.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that was very interesting. Once again, let me remind everyone that tonight's show is brought to you by Imagineering Productions, a full-service SEO and web media company, and the media goddess worldwide. Now, I see, hello, do we have a mystery caller on the line? Hello?
Are you talking to me, Mickey?
I'm talking to you.
It's Gwen.
I'm talking to you. Gwen, you little rascal, you. This is Gwendolyn Holden Berry. She is the host of Here Be Monsters, and this was a surprise visit, sort of, kind of, last minute, and it's because you got something to tell us that you can't wait to tell us.
I was going to come over and update you on the Occupy movement here in, it's actually combined with Lake Worth and Palm Beach, or West Palm Beach.
Okay. Do it.
And one of the things I would like to tell folks who are interested out there, you can right now actually go to what they call Occupy. You know, they've been live streaming all of these movements at the
mm-hmm.
different places online. You can now go to one place called OccupyLivestream.com, and all of the live streams of the Occupy movements globally are all up. It's so cool. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So, folks should know about that. Occupy Lake Worth, West Palm Beach has begun to occupy downtown in West Palm Beach at the end of Clematis, behind the fountain there in the grass. Yes, there's an Occupy actually underway. Last night there was a bit of a problem with the West Palm Beach Police Department as to whether they could stay beyond 11 p.m., the moment came and passed. There were no arrests, but we would appreciate folks calling in to the West Palm Beach Police Department and let them know that you're for, if you are, for supporting the Occupy movement. And the number for the West Palm Beach Police is 561-822-1900.
You're amazing.
The West Palm Beach mayor a call to Jerry Munio, I believe their name is. Is that how you pronounce it, Mickey? Munio?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure. I've heard her any number of times. She's a very nice lady, and I'm glad she won, but I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name.
Okay. No. Well, I wanted to also bring up the fact that the Occupy West Palm Beach, Occupy Lake Worth group was in presence and on camera before the camera lenses this last Thursday for the town hall meeting of Representative Alan West. They went down and let him know that they don't like who what he stands for and that he's got some competition coming. Let's see. I'm trying to get all the little T's crossed.
Well, you have time.
Here for you. Anybody interested in coming down and becoming part of our Occupy movement? We have a couple of hundred people that are cycling in and out now that it's occupying. It's, as I said, Dan, you know where the big fountain is at the bottom of Clematis, right?
I was on Clematis yesterday. Is it near that ice cream parlor?
Yeah, it's really in the grass going towards the intercoastal there, towards the dock.
Okay, so it's
there
between the end of the commercial area and there's like a park-like area and the water. That's where
yes.
it is.
They're behind Bradley's.
Behind. Oh, okay, so a little further towards, closer to the water than I was. That's why I didn't see it, because I was there,
there,
but I didn't see it. Do they have signs and things like that? I mean, how?
Go ahead.
Do you have any idea how many, do they have signs and things, or?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how if somebody wanted to find them, how easy would it be for them to find them if they just started going? Is it closer to where that band shell? Is it close to the band shell, far away from the band shell?
You know, yes. Well, do you know where the fountain is at the end, where the ice cream shop is to the side and all of that, that big fountain area, park, little parks in area?
Yeah, the fountain was off yesterday, so I didn't see it. But I'm pretty sure that's where it is. There's like a little circle. Traffic goes in a circle or something, and the fountain is right there.
Yeah, if you just go right down there, you'll see them. Look towards the water. They're right there.
See, I thought there was more people than usual, and I thought, oh, good, business is picking up. I think there's people here.
Picking up. It's Occupy, and I'm sure the occupiers are actually giving business to the local pizza.
Oh, they
or
are.
Pizza
you know, up. Now that makes sense, because I went to look at fabric, and I'm walking down. I said, I haven't been here in a long time. Let me walk down and see what's going on, and I see a lot of stores that are empty and this and that and the other thing, but I see a lot of people. They're all over the place. They're in the restaurants. They're hovering here. They're hovering there. And I'm like, and there was something about the energy or something. I thought these people kind of look like activist type people. But I said, yeah, but what's going on? I'm looking to see if there's anything going on. Is there a marquee anywhere? It gives me a clue. Still nothing. And I went, oh, well, I just have a lot more people. Good for them. They've managed to attract people. And now that makes perfect sense. That's why there was all those people. That explains it.
It's the Occupy crowd. There's a lot of really wonderful activists that are the core down there, that out of the Night Heron Center here in Lake Worth. they also were absolutely wonderful showing up and making their presence known at Alan West's town hall meeting. I was going to say to you on another subject, because I know you're speaking about progressive Democrat caucusing and all of that. That's your job here. I think it's absolutely wonderful that the opportunity has grown so large for Dade County to, or for actually the state of Florida, to put a more viable candidate for senator when that seat comes up for Marco Rubio, with the bucket of whatever he's fallen into has happened to him in the last week. You know what I'm talking about?
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. No, you know what? I am not. I see that name and I shouldn't, but I just kind of go, not so much. So, no, what happened? Tell us.
Well, he basically made his political hay on the fact that he and his family were part of the exodus from Cuba, when the truth is that a full 3.5 years prior, while Batista was still solidly in power, his folks came over to enjoy the fruits of their labor here in South Florida. So he's basically been lying about his background for the whole time he's been in office. Yes. Hard to believe.
Unbelievable. Someone like him. What's this world
coming to? I don't like his policies, But when you find out that they're bald-faced liars that way, it's not surprising, but it's disappointing, isn't it?
Oh, please, there's an understatement. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's kind of interesting, and I heard is his denial. I did not bother to check out the facts, and I should have, but I didn't, his denial saying that that's absolutely ridiculous, and I did hear about it, and now I know what you're talking about. But what I think is interesting, and I wanted to get what you thought about this, is the bigger picture. And that is that, A, there's enough progressives to go to Orlando, where Rick is now, to this Awake the State Summit, to generate a story by the Orlando Sentinel. And I don't know if anybody else did, but we were mentioned in the Orlando Sentinel, so we like people who mention our show. And the point is that they, A, acknowledged that, A, the group is there at all, is great. B, that the regular conventional press acknowledged its existence and distinctly referred to it as the progressives are organizing to fight the Rick Scott agenda when the legislatures go back into session. And
that's wonderful.
I think it is wonderful. I think that
wonderful progress. Congratulations.
I think it's terrific progress. I think that it is indicative, and I bet you that stuff like that is happening all over the place. Because if it can happen in Florida, which is, well, it's a rather conservative state overall, I'd say. Certainly that's what it seems to have been. And so if it can happen here, it has to be happening elsewhere around the country.
Well,
and I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement has given people an opportunity to feel like they're doing something and venting all this frustration that has been building for years and that they have not been able to channel constructively until now.
Have you seen what Occupy Miami has accomplished? I mean, they have gotten themselves into the national news with their Occupy of the Fed down there. The end of last week. And also in Orlando, the Occupy group up in Orlando, Occupy is my thing, honey. I know I got my hand on the pulse of this thing as best I can. Occupy Orlando, there were, I think, several, and it could be above 20 arrests last night. The more they arrest the peaceful gatherers in these groups, the more the movement grows. And a real important thing, Mickey, that I keep mentioning, I mentioned it, we were talking about it a few minutes back on my show, and it's that this is a global movement. This is people saying, enough with the bought and paid for governments. We've had it. We want to live decently and in a clean world.
Hey, hallelujah. I think it's fantastic. But like I said, what I think is even more fantastic is that it's actually, there's a wave. I was reading, I went to the getmoneyout.com website because someone had sent me this email and I said, okay, what is this? And the fellow is Jimmy Williams or something like that. He's a former lobbyist and he is preparing a constitutional amendment to get the money out of government, the big lobbyists, the big money that's controlling a lot of things. And I don't know how they're going to do that, but there were a couple of proposed amendments on the website at the moment. And they are actively looking for, I mean, he outlines everything, how he wants, this is the first thing that has to happen, this is the second thing that has to happen, and so forth and so on. And, I mean, getting an amendment passed is not easy. But the point is that it has even happened is spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
You have
to realize, too, that, things are happening a lot quicker than usual. It's just what's in the sky lately. The movement, what a lot of people are calling the horizontal movement of Occupy on a global basis, but certainly here in America, and in Canada right now, think about it. Dang, it's only 38 days old, 38 days, and it's growing every day.
It's fantastic. Well, I'm sure that that is helped by the internet a great deal.
Oh, and Twitter, yeah. The social nets have made all of these things possible. They're even
advances in technology. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
They're even occupying Tahrir Square again in Egypt.
Oh, well, good for them.
Yeah, there's been problems over there with the military.
Yeah,
it's like we traded one for the other, and people are getting back up and starting to form.
It happens. You have to have a plan. You can't just this is what's fundamentally wrong with a lot of the conservative noisemakers is they have no plan. They really haven't got any constructive observations to make. All they want to do is tear things down. But they have no plan other than the Pizza Man 999 thing, which is a disaster walking. But other than I don't know, and nobody has a plan. They're cobbling things together now, a day late and a dollar short. But that's a problem. You can't just tear things down without knowing what you're going to you leave a void, something's going to fill. This is a law of physics. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. This happens. So people, you know, and that's why I love the fact that they're coming up with a constitutional amendment. It isn't just enough to say we want to get the money out. You want to say we want the money out, and this is how we're going to do it. Solutions.
Well,
we are about solutions.
Yes, the group that is occupying Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. is called October 2011, headed by Chris Hedges and Dr. Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zies and Dennis Traynor. They have, every day, they have ongoing workshops, they have solutions that they're ready to present, but they're also doing the horizontal movement, just establishing themselves and showing up where there is something wrong. This is how they're establishing the presence, the movement, the growth and the solidity.
That's what this fellow was talking about, is that he needed to create the wave. And I think there is a wave. I think Occupy Wall Street is the beginning of the wave, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I personally hope it doesn't get violent because it's not going to help. But I think that the continued peaceful insistence on what's right.
Mickey, you know, the only violence has been the brutality of the police. And in most cases here, and thank you for bringing that up, because I would like to say that every Occupy, it's been every Saturday for the last month that we've met over at Bryant Park here in Lake Worth. And the presence of the Palm Beach Sheriff's Department has been avuncular and guiding and nothing but helpful. They really deserve our thanks.
Well, let's give a shout out to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Department. Yay, team. All right. That's good to know. That's good.
It's good to know these things, but when you take a look up in New York City at what's going on, you think they'd get a clue, because every time those white shirts come out, those supervisors come out and make arrests, the movement grows. It just gets bigger. And it's all peaceful. Did you know that Pete Seeger at 92 with Arlo Guthrie were there on Friday? Is that amazing?
I saw it. Actually, I saw it. I saw the little thing on the... I went to the website and checked it out. I saw it. That's so cool.
It is. It's hopeful.
Very, very cool. Well, he's not dead, and his brain's still working, and so is his body, and he was going to... I love it. I think it's great, and I think that's what's happening, is it's giving people the opportunity to put their money where their mouth is, and people either can go there physically... And by the way, we've only got a minute left, so... She just told me in my ear. Is there if somebody wants to go to an Occupy movement in their town, is there what the main website is for them to go check out the locations?
Yes, you can go to occupytogether.org, and that will direct you to the meetup, and you can find from there. It's all accessible by the net. And if you want to come on down here locally, whereas, as I said, just beyond the fountain off Clematis, occupied.
Okay. Well, rock and roll. Thank you so much, Gwen. I really appreciate you giving us this very, very interesting piece of news. And I know Rick does,
well,
too.
You're welcome. And don't forget, Here Be Monsters is on every dang day in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street.
Okay, on Blog Talk also. And what time is that?
Weekdays, 4 to 6 p.m. and on the weekends, 6 to 7.
Okay. We're gone. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night.